Good morning. We started last week with the topic of Misha Para, and we discussed how if a person walks into a store, he buys a camera, he pays for it in full, and then at the last moment he changes his mind, he tells the seller, that's it, I want my money back. So the halacha is, he has every right to ask for his money back. Until he did a Maisa Kinyan, until he did Hagboa, Meshicha, until once he picks it up off the counter, it's his, it's too late. But if he just pays for it and changes his mind, he has the right to demand a refund. It doesn't matter what the store's return policy is. As far as halacha is concerned, the kinyan never took place, the sale never happened, and he's entitled to a refund. That being said, the seller doesn't have to just hand him back his money. He can tell him, come with me to Beis Din, and I want you to accept a Misha Para. The Beis Din will give him this curse, Misha Para me'ayin shei dor ha'mabel b'mitzrim b'ayom hu yifra mimi shei'no imid b'divuroi. But if the buyer is willing to accept the curse, he has every right to take the money and to walk away. Now, I'd like to discuss what's probably the most common din Torah case of Misha Para. Warning, it's a little bit complicated in halacha, but I think by now the olam's up to it, so bear with me for a few minutes. And the question is as follows. A person signs a contract, he's buying a house. Now when you sign a contract, you very often give a deposit, and the closing doesn't take place for a couple of weeks, a couple of months. What's the halacha if the buyer or the seller have cold feet? And they decide they want to back out, they don't want to go through with the deal. Can they be forced to go through with it? Is there a Misha Para or not? Now, there is a signed contract. A contract, as we mentioned, one of the kinyanim for real estate is a kinyan shtar. There are many issues with today's contracts. They're not written the correct way. We're going to put that aside. We're not going to discuss the fact that there's a contract. It's for another shiur. What we're going to focus on is there was a deposit given. You gave money to the seller. Once the deposit is given, do you have the right to back out or not? Now, what's the question? The issue is that until now, all of the Gemaras that we've learned about Misha Para are talking about metaltalin. You're buying movable goods, you're buying a camera, you're buying food, you're buying something movable. We pass in like Rabbi Yochanan, that midoraisa, the moment you pay for metaltalin, mo'is arkayna. The goods are yours, the deal is done, no one has the right to back out. Chazal had a problem. The problem is that if the goods get destroyed between the payment and delivery, the buyer is going to lose out. So Chazal went ahead and they said, we're being mevatel the kinyan. Although midoraisa belongs to the buyer who was paid for, the Chazal said, the kinyan is off. Now that's going to create problems. Because once the kinyan, Chazal did not want people, once they gave their word, they gave a deposit, Chazal didn't want people just backing out. So in order to solve the problem that, in a way, since Chazal created, that the Takana creates, so there's a new halach of a Misha Para, that if you want to take advantage of the loophole that Chazal created, and you want to back out, even though you gave money, which would be a Kenyan, Chazal said you could do it, but you shouldn't, and if you do, you're going to get this klal, this Misha Para. That lumdus only makes sense by metaltalin. Since there should be a Kenyan, Chazal took off the Kenyan, they created a Misha Para. When you're buying real estate and you give a deposit, when you pay for real estate, what's the halacha? Is that a kinyan? It is a kinyan. Midarais, it's a kinyan. Even midrabbanon, it's a kinyan. Now, it happens to be... Okay, we'll get that in a minute. When paying for real estate, even midrabbanon is a kinyan. There's no problem with nisr v'chitacha. Real estate generally doesn't burn down, or once it's being sold, there's no takano involved over here. So if that's the case, Chazal left the kinyan as it was. It happens to be, when you sign the halacha is, that today, when you pay for real estate, the kinyan does not happen. Why? Because today people deal with contracts, they deal with deeds. It's an asr d'kasvi shtara. People are not same with us. The deal is not final until they get the deed, until they get a contract, a signed contract. But that, Balpi Pashtas, has nothing to do with Chazal. People, the minhug became that until you have the deed, until you have a contract, you're not semich das, money doesn't create a kinyan. That's not Chazal's problem. That's the people's own decision, their own choice that they should not be koina with money. So the question is, when you have a situation with karka, with real estate, where Chazal never interfered with the kinyan, but it happens to be afal pike, and money does not create a kinyan because you're going to wait for the shtar, you can wait for the closing. So is there a takano of mishapara in such cases or not? Now this is a machlokes. The Ramban suggests that there should be no mishapara. Mishapara is limited to metatlin because Chazal made a problem by taking off the kinyan, so they solved the problem by mishapara. But if it's talking about karka, the Ramban suggests there should be no mishapara. However, the Pesach Tshuva brings down, and from the Mishkanos Yaakov, most Rishonim argue on the Ramban, and most Rishonim say that mishapara will apply. Since, at the end of the day, whatever the reason is, you paid for it, the kinyan didn't take place yet, mishapara will apply. So, the way it would seem right now, although we're dealing with when you put down a deposit on a house, although it's real estate, it's karka, still, according to Rav Poskim, mishapara should apply. Now, the next issue we have to deal with is that the classic case of mishapara is, you buy the camera, it costs $100, you give the seller $100, you say you'll take delivery tomorrow, and then the parties want to back out. So there the halacha is, you could back out, but there's a mishapara. What happens if you don't pay the full price? The property is worth $500,000, and you're giving it $15,000 deposit. So here also, it's clear in the Mechaber and Sif Aleph that it makes no difference. Just like when you want to do a kinyan kesef, when you want to use, you can give a dollar, and that can be koina, a project which is worth $10 million. The point is, giving a partial, making any payments, even a dollar, a nickel, a pruta, that itself can create a kinyan. So for mishapara as well, even a partial payment will create a mishapara, and therefore the fact that the deposit is only a small amount will not make a difference. Correct. By karka it works midaraisa. By metatlin midaraisa it should be a kinyan. Chazal took it off, and that's why we have nisur v'chitecha, and that's why you need mishicha. But that's why there's a mishapara.
So the remainder of the money is only in terms of a choiv.
The remainder is a choiv in most cases. Correct. Zalkin of the Nova. Again, in Arvuna Yikoin, there's a sugyo, you may have seen that Gemara, but that's a specific case of Arvuna Yikoin. In a classical case where you pay part of it and you're going to pay the rest at the closing or over time, that's a halva, that's a choiv, but the kinyan takes place as soon as you make this partial payment.
Is the check considered
payment? Okay, that we'll have to get to, because a check, even if it's not kesef, giving a shtar choiv, there's Machan Ephraim, there's a nesivus, may be different because there's no Nisr Vukhtech of Aliyah. It's we're going to have to put that on hold for today.
The English contract, the deposit contract says, I intend to buy it at this date. The contract usually will say, in a deposit, I intend to buy this.
Okay, very good. Very good. We'll get to that. So far we have the issue of karka, and there the halacha is, mishapara does apply according to most paiskim. The fact that it's a partial payment also will not absolve you from the chiyuv of mishapara. But the more serious question is that the classic case of mishapara is you buy the goods and you pay for it. Paying could be a kinyan. By metaltalin or by real estate where you're supposed to write a shtar, it's not a kinyan, there's a mishapara. What happens if you don't give, if you don't pay for the goods, but you give collateral, you give a mashkin? So here are the Rif Paskins, that a mashkin does not create a mishapara. Mishapara is, you buy it, you pay for it. Paying should be a kinyan. So in the absence of a kinyan, there'll be a mishapara. But if you walk into a store, and you want to buy a camera, and you realize you forgot your checkbook, you don't have any money, so you give the person your watch. This is collateral, I'm going to come back, I'm going to buy it tomorrow. Or for that matter, let's say you give him a check. You say, here, I'm giving you a check, but I'm going to come back tomorrow, I don't want to use this account, I'm going to come, I'll give you from a different account, I'll give you cash. Hold on to the check, I'll come back tomorrow and I'll pay you for it. So here, is this a tchilas piroin? Did you start paying for the goods? No. You've simply given collateral to force you to go through with the deal. And here the Rif Paskins, and it's brought down in Shulchan Aruch, by a mashkin, we say mona inkan, mashkin inkan, the kinyan does not take place. For a kinyan, you need a tchilas pira, and you have to actually start paying for it. Collateral does not create a kinyan, and therefore a mashkin will not create a mishtapara. Now, interestingly, the Yerushalmi Paskins, and it's not brought down in Shulchan Aruch, but the Tarkei Moshe does quote it, that it depends what you give for a mashkin. If you give a tabas, if you give a ring, you give a watch, you give some sort of physical collateral, everyone agrees, it means nothing, there's no mishtapara. However, if you give money as collateral, which his case is, you gave the person gold coins, and you told them, hold on to this, I'll come back tomorrow and we'll switch it for silver coins, which is what I want to pay you with, there the Yerushalmi Paskins, there would be a mishtapara. Since you have the right to spend it, there would be a mishtapara. So, going back to our case, when a person puts a deposit down on a piece of property, the deposit is cash. You give back, you give money. You're not giving collateral. You're giving money as this deposit. If it's money, according to the Yerushalmi, even though a mashkin collateral does not have mishtapara, when you're giving cash, when you're giving money that can be spent, there would be a din of mishtapara. Good. Excellent. We'll get there. Well, correct. He's securing the deal. And the point of the Rishayim is that it's not a kinyan.
But if it's proper, if you give it to the real estate, though, that money is going to go to the sale.
Fine. It means at the time of the closing, it will be applied towards the purchase price. But right now, until the closing, it wasn't paid yet.
Yeah, but in one case, there was no intention at all that this should ever go towards the sale.
Correct. That's true. That's a difference. But in Halacha, we were going to look at what happened now. Right now, the money was not a first payment, it's something which will be credited towards the purchase price in the future. But until that future time, it's nothing more than security to secure and to force the parties to go through with the deal.
You gave the gold coins, the money can spend those coins?
So that's a good question. The Pnei Moshe seems to say that yes, the Moshe has the right to spend the coins in between, and if the person comes back and backs out, he does not have to give those specific gold coins. The Rajba and some other Rishonim are... perhaps mashma, not like that, but that's the Pnei Moshe on the Yerushalmi does learn that that's why it's a kinyan. But now this leads us to the last issue, and that is, what's a normal case of mishtapara? I buy a camera, I give the money, I pay the $100, and at some point someone decides to back out. So halacha is, he has the right to back out. The money gets refunded, but the person backing out gets this klolo, gets this mishtapara. When you give a deposit on a piece of property, what happens if you change your mind and try to back out? So, you're going to lose your deposit. Very often the deposit is non-refundable. So the question is, how in halacha do we look at a non-refundable deposit? So some achroinim, there's a Beis Shloimeh that says, that when you give a non-refundable deposit, what you're essentially saying is like this. I want to buy this property. My commitment to buy the property is, I'm giving you this deposit, and if I don't close, you can keep the deposit. If that's the case, then is this deposit a tchilas piron? Is it a first payment? No. It's nothing more than a penalty, that you're going to force me to close by saying, if I don't close, I'll lose the deposit. If that's the case, if the buyer wants to back out and is willing to walk away from the deposit, you have the right to do that. All he's doing is saying, I'm not buying it. This is not the first payment. I'm committing that if I walk away, if I don't close, if I breach the contract, you keep the money. Now, the problem with this approach is, and the Minchas Pitim points out, what happens if the seller wants to walk away? Did the seller give the buyer a deposit? No. The buyer gives the seller a deposit. So if the only thing that happens when you give a deposit is, it's an agreement that if I walk away, you keep the deposit, then the seller has absolutely no obligation to go through with the deal. And it should be mutter l'chachila for him to back away. There's no mishapara because there's no kinyan, there's no tchilas piron. There's no penalty because the seller's not the one that gave the deposit. So there's nothing binding him to the deal. And so because of this question, the Minchas Pitim learns that when you're giving a deposit, two things are happening. The first thing is you're giving the deposit, it's like a first payment, the deal happens right away, and anyone that backs out, there's a mishapara. Both parties are locked into the deal. The buyer, the seller, makes no difference. They want to back out, there'll be a mishapara. In addition to the mishapara that's there because money was given, there's also a penalty that if the buyer walks away, he's going to forfeit the deposit. But what comes out according to this minchas pitim is that if a buyer wants to walk away from the deal and he tells the seller, listen, I signed the contract, my word's a word, keep the deposit, I want out. According to the minchas pitim, you can't do that. Because the deposit does two things. It's first of all a penalty, you're going to lose it if you walk away. But it's also a tchilas piran, it also creates a kinyan. And therefore, even if the buyer is willing to give up the deposit, he would still be chayav a mishapara if he backs out. So it comes out, the buyer has two reasons to go through the deal. There's a penalty and a mishapara. The seller only has the mishapara, but both parties would be locked in. This is the psak of the Minchas Pitim. The Chazon Ish, and it's the Mila Din Azikin says this over B'Shem Nigros Moshe as well, says no. When a person gives a deposit, if you want to know api halacha what should happen, api halacha he says it should be a kinyan, a tchilas piron, and there should be a mishapara. But they say, you know what it means when a person writes that if he walks away, he loses the deposit? What that means is they're agreeing to buy out the mishapara. Really, whoever backs out should get a mishapara. When I write there's a non-refundable deposit, what that means is the buyer can buy out the mishapara by leaving the deposit, by losing the deposit. But if he comes according to this chat, the buyer has every right to walk away as long as he's willing to forfeit the deposit, because his whole chiyuv, the whole reason why he should be locked in is there's a mishapara. By having a clause that walking away means I will pay this penalty, that it's understood to mean that this is the sole remedy. If I pay the penalty, there's no longer a mishapara. So it would be mutter, according to this, it would come out the seller is locked into the deal because if he wants to back out, there's a mishapara. The buyer, since you have this clause, his liability is limited to the deposit, and if he's willing to lose the deposit, then he will not get a mishapara.
When you said before that the seller doesn't have, is not found like the buyer according to that shita.
Right.
Why would the buyer give the money for if the seller could walk out? The whole purpose of him giving the money is that the seller shouldn't walk out on it and sell it to somebody else.
That is the Minchas Pitim's question. But the response is, the buyer is giving the money, usually it's there to secure the seller. The seller wants to make sure the buyer won't walk away. But according to this pshat, you're right, the buyer has no safety net. There's nothing locking in the seller. And if he wants the seller to be locked in, he should negotiate something and add it into the contract.
He'd have to put something in,
correct. Now, the truth is, if you look at contracts, very often the contract specifies, when there's a deposit, it says either the sole remedy of the seller is to keep the deposit as liquidated damages. Sometimes it says the other way. The seller, in addition to any other remedies and specific performance, can keep the deposit for liquidated damages. Very often the contract specifies what the intent is. This whole machlokes is really when it's not clear in the contract, and we have to figure out what the ikar halacha is. But certainly the wise thing to do is, when you're signing a contract, make sure it's very clear whether the deposit is the only remedy that the seller has, or whether it's in addition to anything to specific performance, in which case there would be a mishapara as well. Now, although this halacha seems to be pretty clear now, that a deposit has a mishapara, because the fact that it's real estate doesn't make a difference. Karka has mishapara according to most Rishonim. The fact that it's a partial payment, we said also, the Mechaber Paskins, there's a mishapara. And the fact that it is just a security deposit, a non-refundable deposit, according to most Paskim, either there is a mishapara in addition to the deposit, or according to the Igros Moshe and the Chazon Ish, you'd be able to back out, but you would have to lose the deposit. But there's another factor we have to deal with. And that is, the whole discussion that we've had is all, the normal case is, you pay the seller for the goods, you didn't accept delivery. So that's a classic case of mishapara. The bigger chiddush was, if you give the seller a deposit, so even though it's only partial, and even though we had this whole non-refundable business, still, according to most pleiskim, we looked at it as a tchilas piron, and it will be enough to create a mishapara. What happens if you don't give the money to the seller? You put it in escrow by a third party, by an attorney. Can you say that's a tchilas piron? No. You haven't paid the seller. You've given it to a third party to hold on to. That in the future, at the closing, it will then be transferred to the seller and go towards the purchase price. In that case, the chayr lekule alma, since the seller did not get the money yet, it is not a tchilas piron. It's simply a mashkin in the hands of a third party, and it's a mashkin the seller doesn't yet have access to and cannot use and cannot spend. And therefore, in such a case where the deposit is given to a third party, there would be no mishapara lekule alma. In such cases, once there's no mishapara, even the security deposit ends up being a question. Because there's an issue of asmachta, which we're not going to go through today, we don't have time to go through today, but generally a penalty clause is highly questionable in halacha whether it's binding. So if you would give the money to the seller and you'd want to back out, even if the penalty clause wouldn't be enforceable, you'd have a mishapara. And if you want to argue there's no mishapara based on the Chazon Ish, then Rav Moshe, they only say there's no mishapara because by paying the penalty, you're buying out the mishapara. But if you don't want to pay the penalty, clearly there would be a mishapara. Maisha Enkein, in such a case where the deposit is and given to an attorney, it's given to a third party, there is no mishapara, and even keeping the deposit would depend on Hilchos Esmachta. Again, you'd have to deal with Mugzik, not Mugzik, it would not be a simple matter, and it's kedai to at least address it in the contract and write it in a way that will be enforceable halacha. Now, let's move on to another case. As we mentioned before, a mishapara is something which is very chomer. A person that wants to back out of a contract or back out of a deal after he paid for it, he has the right to back out, but we don't let him back out so fast. We call him in front of Bezdin. Bezdin gives him this klala of mishapara, mi'anshei dar hamavol. It's very chomer, and normally people are not willing to accept a mishapara. When you explain to them the halacha and explain to them that you have to accept this curse, it is extremely rare for a person to say afal piking. We did have one story a few years ago in the Beis Din. It was a very disturbing story, actually. But it brings out a number of very interesting halachas. A person put together a real estate deal. Building was 8 townhouses. And as his syndication fee for putting together the deal, although he wasn't an investor, he didn't put any money in, the investors gave him, they told him at the end of the day, when the complex is up, they are going to give him one of the townhouses. And they signed the contract. This syndicator needed the money, so he flipped the contract. And he sold this townhouse for $400,000. He took the money up front. They then developed the complex. A year and a half later, when the houses were ready, this syndicator went ahead and sold the townhouse to someone else for $500,000. Good business. So they sold the same house twice. Comes into Beis Din, and he tells the Beis Din that, listen, I know you're not going to be happy with what I did. I sold it to one person, I took the money, I used the money, and I sold it for... But I need this money desperately. And I don't care if what I did was right or wrong. If I have to accept the mishapara, I'll accept the mishapara, but I want out, and I want to be able to sell it to the second person. Adkan. So what do you do? So, the first question is, again, we're dealing with real estate. Real estate, is there a mishapara? According to Rav Paiskim, yes, there is a mishapara, even though it's not matatli, mishapara will apply. But here we have a much more basic problem. Mishapara is normally, I walk into a store, I want to buy a camera. I give him the money. I say, I'll come back tomorrow for the camera. Classic case of mishapara. Over here, the first buyer gave the seller, the syndicator, $400,000 for what? For a townhouse. At the time that he gave the money, was there a townhouse here? No. There was just a big hole in the ground. It was a pile of dirt. It wasn't built yet. The halacha is something which is loy bo lo'olam, something that does not yet exist, you cannot sell. You cannot make a kinyan on. Okay, hold on. If you cannot make a kinyan on it, if even had they done Hagbah, Mashiach, Shtar, every kinyan in the book, Sudr, if you can't make a kinyan on it, it's something which cannot be sold, you cannot have a Mishapara either. Mishapara is always, you go through the actions, you go through, you do what should be a kinyan. But Chazal said it's not a kinyan, after the Kashri story, there's some reason why it doesn't work, we have a Mishapara. But if what you did could not have worked in halacha, the halacha is there's no Mishapara. It's true. If they sold the karka, that may have worked. But he did it. He sold a townhouse. He sold a developed property. And that didn't exist. Had they signed the contract just on the dirt, you're right. It would have been fine, but it's not what happened. Okay, well, but that's not... If I sell you a completed house, and I come back to you and say, listen, I can't give you the house, but here, take the dirt. I can't force you to take that. That's not what I promise you. That's not the deal. So since it is Mechusar Shalosh, there are significant improvements that need to be done, because at the time there was nothing. So you cannot sell something that doesn't exist. But it gets worse. Because there's a halacha in Hilchos Ribbis. If I sell, let's say I have goods that are worth $1,000. And I want to sell it, I need cash today. And I want to sell it for $900 today. And I'll deliver the goods in a year from now. So this runs into a ribbis problem. And the halacha is like this. If I have the goods in stock, that's fine. Because since I can deliver it today, whatever I have in stock, I can sell it at a discount. That's not a problem. That's not a problem with ribbis. But what happens if I don't have it in stock? And I tell you, give me $900 today, and I'll give you $1,000 worth of merchandise in a year from now. That's ribbis. Because in exchange for getting the money a year in advance, I'm giving you more value. And that will be usur, and that's a pretty clear halach. What about the next case? What happens if I tell you, give me $900, and right now this merchandise is worth $900. I don't have it in stock, but I will, in a year from now, I'll deliver these goods to you. A futures contract. So here the halacha is, there's also a problem of ribbis. Why? Because if the value goes up, if at the end of the year, these goods are worth $1,000. We look at it as, I got $900. I'm giving you $1,000 worth of merchandise a year later. That difference is a schar m'tanas mois. That difference is ribbis. Now, this is a tremendous chiddush because the value could have gone down. It's an equal bet. It's karav lezeh lezeh. But still, if I give money in advance and I accept delivery later, if the value goes up, that appreciation is going to be considered ribbis. There are a few. There's an important exception to this rule. If it's yotza ashar, if the goods are readily available at the price that I accepted for, then it's mutter. In other words, if I accept $1,000 to deliver $1,000, you know, a certain amount of a commodity, and that commodity is readily available for that price, the halach is it's mutter because I can just buy it and sell it. There's no hefsid. But if I'm selling something which is not yotza ashar, it's not readily available, or you're not paying in full, if it goes up in value, there's a problem of ribbis. Going back to our townhouse case, the person sold the townhouse for $400,000. A year later, when he was ready to deliver it to the buyer, how much is it worth? $500,000. Essentially, in exchange for a $400,000 loan that he got a year ago, he is now delivering goods worth $500,000. This is a problem of ribbis. It's not yotza hashar, because this townhouse didn't exist. There's no shar. It happens to be real estate. Anyways, it has different halachos. And therefore, not only would there not be a mishapara for the person who's backing out, it would be usur for him to go through with the deal. Because he's giving the buyer a $500,000 piece of property in exchange for a $400,000 loan that he took out a year ago. And therefore, not only is it mutter for him to be chayzer, it's probably a chiyuv for him to back out or to renegotiate with the original buyer. Excuse me?
Is there a way to do such a transaction and protect the buyer?
You can write a heteroska, but it has to be done. Now, what? No, it's like this. Okay, so let me make, there are two important points. Okay, slow down. Without going too deep into Hilchos Ribbis, this case is not that common for two reasons. The first reason is that the Marsham Paskins, this is only usur if you pay in full. You paid the $400,000, a year later it's delivered. We look at this as any appreciation we say is being done. You locked in the price in exchange for a loan. However, let's say you just take a 10% deposit. An amount of money that the seller needs just to make sure he's secure. There, the Mishpat Shalom Paskins, when it's clear that you're taking the deposit up front, not because it's a loan, not because in exchange for the Amtana you're locking the price, you just need to bind him. You want to make sure that when you build the project, he's going to close. He says, there's no problem with ribbis. The problem is only when you give a significant amount where we look at it as the benefit, the locking the price is in exchange for a loan. But if it's a minimal amount, if it's just a deposit to secure it, it's not a problem. The second reason why it's usually not negeah is that if it goes to an escrow by a third party, there's no question of ribbis. There was no loan. It was in the hands of a third party. And the third reason why it's usually not negeah is because if yeshloi, if you're selling an existing property, there's no iser. This is only when you're selling something which is loy bala oilam. If you're selling an existing house, but just the closing is taking place later, you can take whatever deposit you want. Because since it's in your possession, you can sell it today for a discount, you can deliver it at a later date. It's only when you're dealing with new construction.
Where
you're paying in full or a significant amount and it's being released to the seller, it would apply. One last, cheshbin is that by karka, usually there's no real defined value. Ein ano l'karkois. And therefore, in many cases, even when you deliver it, it will not be clear that he's getting a discount. And therefore, because ein ano l'karkois, this issur may not apply. Our story was a townhouse complex, where there are 30 of the same thing, and there's a clear shar yadua, because they're being bought and sold, and the price is clearly higher. There you'll have an issur. In a case when you're dealing with a specific home, which doesn't have a defined value in Hilchos Ribbis, there may not be a problem. Okay, anyway, without getting too bogged down in Hilchos Ribbis, what will come out is if you give a deposit or if you pay for something which is loy bala olam, it wasn't created yet, there the halachos of Mishapara will not apply. What happens if it's Eino Bishusai? You have a sale on cameras and people buy out your entire stock. Someone else comes into the store, they want to buy the camera. You tell them, listen, I don't have any more in stock. But if you pay me today, I'll get it in next week. I'm getting more in. I'll give it to you then. So in halacha, what does this mean? When you're selling something which you don't own, this is eino b'yeshusa. It's not as bad as loy bala olam. It exists, but you don't have possession of it. So here the halacha is, there's an interesting halacha, that although normally you cannot sell something that you don't own, if you want to sell a piece of real estate that you just have a contract on that you plan on buying, you can sell it. It's Eino Birshusa. But if there's a halacha, if it's Yatza Hashar, if you're selling a goods that are readily available, there it could be sold. And therefore, if you're selling a camera which is available, the suppliers will have it, it's not a problem to get it, even though you don't have any in stock, still, once you accept money for it, there will be a Mishapara. On the other hand, if it's some exotic goods that are not readily available, then although there may be some stores that have it, there will not be Mishapara unless you actually have it in stock. So it'll come out, it's a very interesting halacha. So if you walk into a store and give a deposit on furniture, so if they have the furniture in stock, if you want to back out, there's a Mishapara. If they don't have it in stock, but it's readily available, it's this just this standard stuff made by Stanley or by some big company that you can get it easily on the open market. So there, even though it's Eino Birshusai, still since it's Yotze Hashar, there will be Mishapar. Masha Ein Kein, if you're buying custom furniture, and this person has to go order it, it has to be manufactured. Or even if it's not custom, if it's something which is not common, and therefore it's not readily available, you may be able to find it somewhere, but you're going to have to work. It's not so easy. There, it will be either loy bala olam or eino bershusay, and there, even though you gave a deposit, there would not be a mishapara. So you're going to have to look at each case and figure out exactly which category this will fall under. He would have to write the contract in a way that it's a hischayvus, and that the seller would have a chiyuv to go ahead to go through with the deal. You'd have to, again, it's a kinyanetein. It's in hilchos mishapara. He's, you know, there's no there would. Okay. You could say very clear, is money going to an attorney or is it going directly to the seller? See, if, as long as you specify in the contract that there's a mishapara or that this is money, it's a tchilas piron, the seller would have a mishapara. The real problem is when it goes to an attorney. If you want to really protect yourself, you have to make it into a hischayvus. Again, it's another whole sugya. It's not. Correct. That would also help. Again, that would only help for mishapara. If the seller is willing to accept the mishapara, you'll have a problem. But, you know, again, there are ways to protect yourself, but it's for a different shear. So, like this. Even without Bezdin getting involved, you're doing something wrong, and when you do something wrong, Kadosh Baruch Hu takes care of it. That being said, there's a concept of a klala. There's an issur to give someone a klala. Vice is that saying bepeh, giving someone a klala, and especially if it's coming from an Adam Gadol, from a Bezdin, that makes a roishim, and that means that the punishment will happen quicker, or midas hadin, whatever the concept of klala is. So it's certainly more chomer or more severe to actually get it. It doesn't mean that if you do not get the klala, you're scot-free, but it means you did something wrong, you did an aval, there'll be a punishment. But the klala adds to it, and adds to the chomer adavar. But again, clearly, even if there's no bezin around, the person doesn't push the case, something wrong was done, and he deserves a klala of mishapara.
Promised to buy it to build a house. At the time that the money was exchanged, it was worth $400,000.
Correct.
In the futures market, it was worth that much. It so happens that at the time of building, that futures contract could be resold for $500,000.
Okay, well, you're assuming that futures contracts are mutzer, and therefore you're asking this should be like a futures contract. What really the halacha of Pesach and Alperis is telling us that futures contracts are problematic. Now, again, a typical futures contract, you don't pay up front for the entire amount. You're paying a certain amount what that risk is worth. And therefore, you will probably have the marsham's heter that it's not a schar amtan as mois. But in theory, if I would pay you in full for a commodity that you're going to deliver in a year from now, that is a mishnah that says that it's also. You're dealing with a clearinghouse. So the clearinghouse, your counterparty is usually a clearinghouse, which is generally not Jewish, and therefore, in a practical level, you won't have an issur ribus. It's only when you're dealing with a real, you know, a private real estate transaction where you know the counterparty is Jewish where this problem begins. Again, when you're buying a futures contract, you're buying the right to get that commodity in the future. Let's go back for a moment. The way the case of the Mishnah is, here's $1,000, you're going to deliver $1,000 worth of goods in a year from now. Futures contracts today usually are, here is $10, I have the right in a year from now to buy $1,000 worth of this amount of the goods for $1,000. You're not prepaying for those goods. In fact, when you buy the goods, if you exercise the option, you have to pay in full then. So that's why it's different. You're not prepaying for a transaction that will happen later. You're giving a certain amount today as a gamble or as speculation that it's worthwhile to lock in the price. So that's why the modern futures contracts are going to be very different and are going to be mutter. You're not prepaying anything.
In the case of the tire that you mentioned with the $400,000 to $500,000, the gentleman asked the question of why did you see he's not selling the house at all, but selling his rights under the contract to get the house.
The problem is that rights, it's really the topic of another shiur, but what are rights? Generally in halacha, you sell something which is a yesh bei mamish. You can sell property, you can sell goods, you can sell services.
But that's all this person has. If you perform the service and it's getting the townhouse.
So the problem is that itself, and that's really why, you know, I alluded to before, that itself is probably a kinyan dvarim, and a name bei mamish. A schus for a house doesn't really exist. You can have a house, kinyan etzein is itself a kinyan dvarim. It's not for now, but there's nothing here to sell. You have to be selling something tangible. You have to be selling services. You can sell, lease. But just the right to get something in the future is not something which a valid kinyan can be made on.
Because the producers of the townhouse are then need to give it to this guy in the first place, because this whole right for the syndication fee is in a spotless.
You can, perhaps, but there you have a different issue, because he did perform certain work, and he's entitled to be paid. If they would want to say that instead of paying you, instead of giving you the townhouse, we're going to give you the value of the townhouse, they will likely have that right. But that's not the way, you know, that, to them it didn't make a difference. You know, you can't say, I'm not paying you for your work because what I promised to give you wasn't loy-boy-loy-lam. But you could say, since that kinyan wasn't effective, I'm going to give you the monetary value in its place. And that's when we get to Schiras Poylem, which might... Okay, that's a good question. That's the discussion of the Ketzoyis and the Trumas Hadesh at the end of Shin Lamed Beis, which may actually will probably be our next topic. Okay, thank you.